Welcome to Boston's Best, a podcast where you go behind the scenes with financial planner Mark Condon as he asks industry-leading experts in and around Boston to talk about their businesses. Mark will find out what sets these companies apart from their competition and how they have risen above the inevitable challenges they have faced along the way to their ultimate success. And now, here's your host, Mark Condon.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to episode 41 of Boston's Best. The goal of this podcast is to highlight businesses in and around Boston. My guest on today's podcast is Brian Borquin. Brian is the co-owner and lead veterinarian of Boston Veterinary Clinic. Brian and Paul have multiple locations, Tremont Street in Boston, which opened in 2014, a location in Brookline, and their newest location that just recently opened up right in the Seaport. Brian shares with us that he'd always planned to be a veterinarian ever since he was a child. He graduated from Cornell University, the number one school in the U.S. for veterinary medicine, and then moved to Boston. He was working as a mobile concierge for veterinary services when his husband, Paul, told him he could open up his own veterinary clinic. Surprisingly, veterinary clinics weren't very common in Boston, and after a long process, they were finally able to open their first location on Tremont Street. In this episode, Brian talks in depth about the full scope of services they provide for dogs, cats, and exotic animals. They put forth so much effort to be known as the community veterinarians. They want your dogs to be pulling you into their office as you're walking by. He also tells us how much they invest in their own staff and give back to the community through attending events and charitable giving. And be sure to listen to the end, as Brian shares a common misunderstood aspect of the veterinary world, what he'd tell his 18-year-old self, and how he defines success in any given year. And so, with that introduction, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Boston's Best. Good morning. This week, we have Brian Borquin. Brian is the co-owner of Boston Veterinary Clinic in Boston. How you doing, man?
Great. Great. Yourself?
Awesome. Awesome. I'm excited to have you on. Who doesn't love pets and talking animals? So I'm very
Easy
excited.
Easy sell.
I know. So before we get into the episode itself, tell us a little bit about yourself. Did you grow up around here? Are you from the area?
No. I'm a transplant. So I went to Cornell University for my vet school. New York boy through and through, but Northern New York, kind of the other New York no one knows about.
Okay.
And I went to St. Lawrence undergrad, and half of St. Lawrence people go to New York City and half go to Boston. And believe it or not, Boston was cheaper. I could keep my car. So there was the decision. So I graduated and moved here 2001, and I never left.
Oh, nice. Nice. So being from New York, we got to ask the sports question. You are wearing a Boston sports hat right now.
I am.
You're a Red Sox fan, Yankees fan, Mets fan. How does that work?
You've got to do Red Sox. So you learn very, very quickly. and I imported my husband from New York City, and he was a Yankees fan, and that hat did not last long. So one thing I learned very quickly is that Boston takes its sports very seriously. So I used to say I go to whoever has the better party, and now I just say Red Sox. It's just simpler, and just yeah. keep them happy.
That's fair. Especially, I mean, if you move, this was 01 you're talking. I mean, that early 2000, I mean, the 01, 02, 03, 04 era was huge for Boston New York rivalry too.
Yes, it was.
Cool, man. So I guess, did you always plan to go into be a veterinarian? Do you always plan to go into this industry?
Yeah, you know, it's always interesting when people say, what did you want to be when you grew up or when did you know? Because I always knew.
Yeah.
I think veterinarian, although probably pronounced wrong as a four-year-old, as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's other things I could have done and been happy and done well, but this really was kind of my life calling. And it's hard to imagine not being involved in some shape or form. So yeah. There was a very, very small amount of time after the veterinarian put my childhood cat to sleep, but I hated vets and I was going to be a corporate lawyer.
Yeah.
Until I realized what corporate law was. And I said, well, that doesn't sound so fun.
Yeah.
Even if you get to wear nice suits. So with the exception of that summer, I've been wanting to be a vet my whole life.
Nice, man. So did you, out of when you graduated, where did you work in between opening up your own clinic?
Yeah. So I look, as I said, I look at jobs both in Boston and New York. Boston easily won out. I had my first job in the South End, a great little company called South Bay Vet Group. They had a practice there and on Charles Street. Just really neighborhood feel, which for a small town boy like myself was really important.
Yeah.
Because when I moved here, I waved to everyone because I thought that's what you did till someone said I looked like a didn't look right. But I really loved the attention to the neighborhood, that you got to know the people whose pets you were taking care of. But often, as happens, your first job in veterinary world usually is not your last.
Yeah.
So I got wooed by corporate America for a while and went out to Belmont and worked at Fresh Pond Animal Hospital for 6 years longer than I should have. But I learned a lot of things of what I didn't want to do. And so when that gig ended, I had a year of doing concierge vet, which is really great in theory and probably would work in Manhattan or Miami. Boston doesn't like to pay extra for stuff just for a fancy name. So it didn't do as well as it could have. But I also quickly learned that I love the relationships. Once again, as I was mentioning, and when you do mobile, you don't have a place to do surgery. You don't have a place to do workup. So if you trust me with your pet, we can only get to such a point. And now I'm shooing you off here, shooing you off there. And while we're very fortunate in Boston, there's really no bad clinics. Yeah. You're still sending your baby and my patient off somewhere else. And so that quickly did not become a good plan for myself. So we started looking and we looked at a lot of crap, places that I wouldn't send my worst enemy to be a veterinarian.
Okay.
During that time, I also did a lot of relief work, which is like a substitute doctor.
Yeah.
And once again, I took little things I liked and didn't like. And so we were we originally wanted to be in Seaport, way outbid. I mean, I can't go up against, people, these restaurateurs, me. And so we were driving back on Tremont Street and I saw a place with a sign. I was like, well, what about there? And like, oh, no, it's got parking, this, that. And it was in Bay Village, and Bay Village can be a tough cookie to crack. And we just worked really, really nicely with them. And we met their demands, which were things that went with us, like having a clean facility and nice plants. And so we opened up in, oh gosh, I think 2007-ish. Yeah, around that time.
Ish.
And the rest was history.
Wow. That's awesome, man. So how long did you do the mobile concierge type thing for? You say that was a year?
About a year and change. So we basically, it's even though Bay Village played very nicely with us, interestingly, being a veterinarian or a veterinary clinic is a forbidden use in Boston or Massachusetts. Okay. So a while back, as the story goes, someone didn't like vets very much and they were next to a vet. So they basically make it impossible. So with the exception of a little area of the Fenway and a few other spotty areas, it's forbidden. So we dropped $50,000 on lawyer fees before we put down our first brick of it, as the case goes, because you have to get a change of use, which means the neighborhoods. This was during Menino's time. So it's a little easier now than it used to be. Anyway, something had to pay the bills because I wasn't working in other clinics.
We did
concierge. I still have people who I call my gold stars. They were the clients who kept us eating during that tough year. Still paying off those credit cards. But it was a good way to learn and just was really awesome because there was people who followed me and trusted in me. And, here I was, this guy on my own driving around, with a little magnet on my car, like, Dr. B's concierge vet clinic. So it was an interesting time.
Yeah. Well, so tell us about that moment. So you were there, you were doing it for a year or so. And then like that moment where you decided I'm going to go for it and just open up my own spot. I mean, that's gotta be terrifying and exciting at the same time.
It is. And I can't claim any of it myself. I never had this idea of having my own clinic. I mean, it just didn't go with, I just figured I'd work for someone. And maybe eventually you buy it. That used to be the old model, right?
Yeah.
So when I was going to stay in Northern New York, when I thought I wanted to marry a woman and live in, the country, you would eventually take over the vet clinic. And that's kind of what it did, right? That's the way it worked. Yeah. So once I kind of bought into this more urban idea, no, I didn't want to run a clinic. My husband's an entrepreneur. He's an MBA.
Okay.
And when I left the corporate gig and I had already worked at some of the best clinics. So it's kind of like, well, I don't know what to do now. I guess we move.
Yeah. Right.
And he's like, well, why don't you start your own? And I was like, I don't know. Other people do that. I don't start my own thing. That sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah. Right.
And, as we kind of like peeled it back a little bit, I was like, he's like, okay, well, why don't you think you can do this?
Yeah.
There's a lot of imposter syndrome in veterinary medicine. Like, I'm not good enough. I couldn't be smart enough to do that. Who would bring the pets to me? And he's like, dude, like all these people are literally like you're driving up in your truck and pulling out your fancy bag and coming in the house and they're going to other vets for the things you're recommending. Like, what makes you think you can't do this? And then the other funny part is the way these things are financed, because vets are super, super safe. We're a safe bet. Yeah. Like, we're a cash business. It really isn't insurance based yet. And we tend to be financially very conservative, right? You don't see vets driving around in Ferraris the way,
fair.
You know, I'll pick on dentists. So like dentists or something, right? So yeah. I think after chicken farmers, we're like the safest like bet as far as like funding. And so I used to get all these like little checks in the mail, like, you know, X amount of money. And yeah. So Paul was like planning this whole, like, go to the bank. And I'm like, no, I get these checks. And he's like, we were never quiet. And I'm like, no, seriously. And they literally give you like a $500,000 based on a smile and a DVM. And it's,
wow.
It's, you know, and I don't know if that happens anymore. Yeah. But, you know, back at the time, we were just considered such, vets just didn't go under.
Right.
And so, so we, you know, negotiated a lease for what seemed like 3 years. And we built it. We built it fairly inexpensive after my recent build out in the Seaport.
Yeah, I could imagine.
And we opened the doors, I think, in July. Haven't looked back. It's been great fun.
So that's pretty cool, man. That's a great story. Tell us some of the early challenges that you faced that came with opening a veterinary clinic in Boston. And then what are some of the early successes that you celebrated? And when was that moment where you were like, I got something here. Like, this is going to be a viable business.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, all the early stuff was just being, you know, in veterinary medicine in general, the corporate practices are kind of taking over. So they just, they can negotiate much better. Yeah. You know, most people, you know, as I said, they did kind of this, like, you buy in because you work there. I was brand new. Like, that was a new concept. No one had opened a new vet clinic in Boston over 20 years.
Wow.
And so, one, like, vendors just kind of didn't know what to do with me. I didn't fit the model. I didn't have a proven track record. So I had vendors who wouldn't even work with me. They're just like, maybe you got a loan on a smile, but we're not going to give you, you know. So that was difficult, you know, kind of proving myself. I was a younger guy. Yeah. A lot of people had the image of, like, you know, this older, more mature veterinarian.
Yeah.
You know, the good thing was I was fairly well known. I've done a lot of philanthropy. And so through Human Rights Campaign and Toys for Joys and some other things. So a lot of people knew me. My name was out there.
Okay.
And I think some people were just looking for something new. So, you know, when we built it, this kind of idea of fear-free, which is decreasing fear, anxiety, and stress, we didn't have a fancy name for it. But a lot of the things that I was doing there, like, we had a cat-only room that was cat-only from the beginning. I love plants. I mean, so we did a really good job making it look hospital. Yep. It didn't smell. Like, you cannot walk in my place and smell anything.
Yeah.
That's not allowed. Yeah. And so we really prioritized customer service. And I've had some good mentors. I mean, they taught me well. Boston is very fortunate. There's no crappy vet clinic.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had, you know, but that's also a little difficult because I had really high standards to me, right? Because, you know, in Tremont Street would probably not where I would have chosen, given there's two other vets like within three blocks. Okay. But I remember the day, because all along Paul was very excited about it. And I wouldn't get excited because I was like, I don't know if we're going to make it. You know, we'd sit there and I'd look at the appointment book.
Yeah.
Look at the door.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, slowly we started to have some repeat appointments. People couldn't get into some of the other clinics. I brought in another vet because I was doing it all myself.
Yeah.
And I remember turning to him and I was like, we're going to make it, right? He's like, yeah, we're going to make it. Like, we blew all our statistics out of the water.
Wow.
Bank of America is the one who gave us our loans. And there's a whole thing each month you have to send in your numbers. Usually you have to do that, I think, for, I don't know, 2 years or something. After 6 months, they said, just stop it. You're fine. You're good.
Wow.
You're not going under. You got this. And so that was the moment where I started to relax a little bit. And I just had fun with it. I mean, I really did. I mean, I think that's something else. Because I was so jazzed to have my own thing.
Yeah.
Like, I was there, I mean, nonstop. It was a bit much. Like, we were taking our meals there.
Yep.
I think I put on 30 pounds of eat at your desk type stuff. But we were there. I mean, we saw everything. We just, we didn't refer things away that other clinics couldn't see. And so I think we kind of built up that momentum. And we kept that neighborhood feel, like, you know, Paul and I were like the welcoming committee, like, hey, everybody, there's little so-and-so. And, you know, we'd go out and give treats to doggies on the street. And you know, we were big into our goodie bags. And we had, you know, we would partner with a lot of the different, you know, restaurants and other stuff, because we like collaboration. Like, that's the fun part, right? Like, that's, you know, if you're going to have all these friends in all these other industries, like, I could finally do something with them. And so we had all sorts of parties and events and fundraisers. Like that was that, you know, the medicine's great, yeah. But it's some of the other stuff that I think differentiates us from just being, quote, just a vet clinic.
Yeah, yeah, no, 100%. I totally agree. That's cool. The community aspect for sure is huge. And then I laugh when you said it can't smell, like you're OCD about that. And yeah, it's tough. Like all you do is work with animals. So sometimes you walk into a vet and you can tell it's a vet, but you kind of expect it. So like, you don't really think too much of it, but I'm self-conscious as my dog is walking around behind me right now. Like I'm self-conscious when people come in the house that our house, if we're used to it, our place doesn't smell like dog, like, and we're just not used to it. So I have candles going all the time because I just never know if I'm just used to it, you know? And it's like my worst fear is I've gone into people's homes and they don't know. And it's bad. And I love animals, but I walk in and it's like, you can't breathe. All you smell is like their dogs and their cats.
We actually even have a signature scent. There's a Boston Veterinary Clinic scent that we use. It's got some lavender in it for decreasing, you know, stress. So that's what you should think of when you walk in our clinic, not animal. And if I walk in and it smells like animal, like someone's getting scolded, and it's not the animals.
Yeah.
It should never smell like, I mean, some of that would just, you know, there's much better cleaners than there used to be. Like to defend some of my vet friends of yesteryear, the cleaners are a lot better. You know, there's a lot more, we don't have intact male cats that come in clinics anymore. Like that's very pungent.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, my clinic should never, you should never smell anything except for the BVC patented smell.
Fair enough. So OCD about that is one thing. It's not easy to start your own business. So you were like a type A personality. Like, how do you and Paul balance each other out running a business? Do you, one of you focus on one specific part and the other one focuses on the other? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. I mean, we learned very quickly that we need to stay in our own lanes. Yeah. The places where we've had issues are when we did start to like, so for example, he handles most of the marketing and that kind of stuff. And when I was starting to put a little bit too much input, that's where we back on your side. So I do the medicine. He does finances, ask for my opinion about marketing stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm all the D's, ADD, OCD. Yeah. you should see my staff one when I come in the building, because not because I'm mean, but just because like it's got to be organized. I like a clean counter.
Yeah.
You know, like the medications need to be in their order, because just to me, like that's efficient. You know, that's efficient. Yeah. So now they would save me that I spend a little bit too much time ordering, in which case it maybe isn't so efficient. But you know, and then the areas where I think that we have learned that we're not the best is Paul and I are both big idea guys, right? We love big ideas. We love new things. The shinier, the better. Shiny squirrel. Implementation is sometimes not always our forte. So that's where we've learned to bring in doers.
Got it.
I shouldn't say instead of thinkers. They're thinkers unto themselves, but people who actually get it done.
Yeah.
Because that's probably the area that we would have our biggest critics is there was a time where they're like, no more new stuff. Let's just focus on this and delivering this before you come at us with another idea.
Yeah.
And that's why we've expanded, because once you realize that you're successful at this and that it's fun, you're kind of ready for the next thing, you know? Yeah. So that was at first we did a practice clinic. It was a small vet clinic in Brookline that was looking for someone to take over the veterinary portion. So we bought the business portion and had a lot of fun doing it. It was kind of fun and neat to recreate. And also just a little, I don't want to say it's a game, but to win over people, right? Yeah. So like when you're new in town, the new doctor, you got to kind of prove yourself. And and in this case, it was definitely the clinic that was there was very basic. You know, it didn't go much farther than it needed to, because it didn't really need to. It was kind of a one doctor shop. They didn't have time to do all this other stuff. Yeah. So when we came in with our more extensive staff, we, you know, start taking things to the other level. They used to have to refer for all their surgeries. So we kept their surgeries in, Brookline's been very great to us. I moved to Brookline, after being a diehard South Ender for 20 years. So Brookline's been very good to us. We loved it. And when we realized we were able to do that and staff it and be successful, because now you're spreading yourself a little thinner, we went back to the Seaport, because that's where this is before the Seaport was even cool. It's just in the area where there wasn't a vet. And interestingly, we ended up getting a lease in a spot that we had looked at way before.
Oh, wow.
And then there was a little bit of time where they were having some issues with the T station had moved, like all the big boom, boom,
yeah,
boom.
Yeah.
And so they stopped the building that we had been looking at. And it was too big anyways.
Yeah.
But when we actually went to get our change of use, once again, Boston, you know, change of use, we saw our name listed. We'd actually forgotten about it, that we had looked at this space, us and like 30 other people, because it was a pretty, pretty premier space. And it actually was an innovation space. So if you were a new industry or you got it, you know, subprime. So a lot of people looked at it, and we were the ones that finally nagged it. But that's fun in a whole other area, right? So it's a whole new area and a different feel. It doesn't have the neighborhood feel yet of Brookline and South End, although that was one of our major arguments. It's like, you can't have a neighborhood till you bring in the vet.
Yeah.
And so we're making a mark over there now as well.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Really love how much you guys have grown. So let's get into the shop itself. Like, what are the full suite of services that you provide? Do you work with, you know, all domestic animals? How, you know, give us the lowdown on all that.
Sure. So I'm going to actually break it down to each individual clinic, if that's okay.
Yeah, totally.
Try to not bore you too much, just because they do different things. So the Bay Village at 363 Tremont Street, basic dogs and cats, dental surgery, daytime admit surgery, full blood work suite, digital everything. Awesome. Yeah. Brookline is more of an outpatient. We do not do surgery and dentistry there. It's in a basement. We made it cute enough, but I wouldn't want to do sterile surgery there.
Yeah.
And we don't do cats there because it's attached to a daycare. And besides being fear-free, which is decreasing fear, anxiety, stress, handling, all that, we're also feline-friendly. And taking your poor kitty and bringing it into a basement that is filled with barking dogs, not really fair to the cats. So we have a very strong rule. We won't see cats there.
Okay.
And stay tuned for Brookline. We're likely looking for something bigger that we can do a little bit more full service down the road. But we love our little space.
Nice.
And then Seaport is everything Bay Village does and more, which sounds very commercial-like. But we actually are hiring a new doctor starting May 4th who's going to be doing exotics. That'll be our first doctor who will be seeing exotics. So exotics are everything that's not dogs and cats.
Okay, that's my next question.
Yep. Without getting into like the big guys, like no sheep, cows, all that stuff. But pocket pets, which are your little mammals, rabbits, ferrets, birds, and reptiles, she does. We're actually hiring an acupuncturist as well, who's going to do a little bit of integrative stuff. So some of the less Western medicine-based stuff. And then the other cool thing there is, unlike Brookline that doesn't have cats, we at Seaport have an area that we call the Kitty Corner, which as you walk in the Seaport is to the right, and Seaport's at 505 Congress Street, as you go to the right is an area that will be just a cat-only waiting room. Which will eventually have a big fish tank separating it. The fish tank is taking longer than the clinic took because they're really, I mean, it's going to be, I'm more excited about that than I think anything.
Yeah, right.
But that's going to separate the cats from the dog waiting area.
Okay.
And then we've got two cat-only rooms and a cat-only treatment area. So really going to be kind of specializing cats there. We've got a few doctors who really dig cats even more than doggies. And that's a newer concept. You know, there are a few cat only practices kind of outside the city, but nothing right in the city. And the poor kitties, they get the shaft. They're not the easiest to bring to the clinics.
Yeah.
So we really work with our clientele to make that an easier. We have a bunch of different things to make it easier. And we really go at their pace. And so it's a very different cat experience as it might be in other clinics.
Okay.
And then the dogs, they've always got it. And then, so besides, the other cool thing we have right now is with curbside, which means the clients can't come in the building kind of till we all think it's safe to be hanging out together again. Yeah. You actually can stand outside because it's all glass. So you can watch little Fido in there. So even though you can't be there, like, physically in the room, you can see the whole thing. We've got phones there that we can put on speaker. So literally it's you know, if you could step through glass, you would be there.
Oh, nice.
Which has been really awesome for people who, because we have so many new puppy owners.
Yeah.
Especially at the Seaport, we see almost all new puppies day, all the time. Yeah. That it's a really great way for them, who are sometimes have as much separation anxiety from the puppy as the puppy does from them, that they can feel like they're part of the exam and they see the whole thing. So that's the highlights of the three clinics.
Yeah. I mean, you know, since you brought it up, we could get into COVID a little bit. We don't have to spend too much time on it, but hopefully we get into near the end of it. How has it impacted you, right? Like a majority of industries have obviously got crushed by it, unfortunately, but certain industries, and I can, anything in the pet area, I would imagine, saw a little bit of a gain. I know so many people that end up either adopting pets or just getting pets because they're simply by themselves and they're bored. So how did COVID affect you over the last 12 months?
Yeah, no, I count my blessings that I think we're one of the few. And I would even like make the delineation between veterinary pet industry and not dog walking or daycare, yeah, because those poor industries, because everyone's dogs are home. So we even as a niche within the pet industry, if you will, have flourished. I mean, it's everyone got a dog and some cats too, but the dogs get all the press because they're the ones that are out and about. So the good things are, you know, we kept busy. We were thankfully considered a essential business. Yep. So we never had to shelter in place. In fact, we even made little things that people could take on the tee with them or put in their windowsill. So we stayed essential. Definitely worked harder than I think I have since probably when I started out, because we went on teams, which was 7 days on, 7 days off, and not seven in a row, but basically you did 7 days and then off. I haven't worked that hard in a very, very long time.
Yeah.
And then just also learning, you know, curbside, we basically within a day were like, oh, you mean first, like, yeah, we're going to let clients in that building, but we'll like, they stand here. Maybe you get 6 feet. No, these are small urban practices. So within one day we went curbside. And then so what that looked like, right? Like I'm so used to just us talking and now like we're running back and forth and hoping we're not going to die of a pandemic. You know, like,
I know, so right?
That part was a little scary, but it brought us all together, right? Because when you get up every day and you're like, hey, we're taking on the pandemic and we're going to do it because we care about pets and their safety. And the other thing is just clients being home, right? So, you know, you can't tell me all these dogs suddenly developed allergies. It's just you were home to watch the dog itch, right? Like, oh, I don't know. Like, suddenly he's itching. Well, no, he's been itching all along.
Yeah, right.
Notice it.
Yeah.
So that was the other thing is there was a lot of like, you know, underlying issues that clients had never noticed till they were home 24/7. So that's all the good stuff. The bad stuff is, you know, working the crazy hours.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, as we did, you know, we lost a few people graduated, a few moved out, a few, you know, it made more sense for them to stay home with their kids.
Yeah.
There was no new blood, right? Massachusetts is one of the hardest states to visit, right? So you weren't going to come and interview here. We were fortunate enough to actually gain a few vets. But it was hard hires, and we had a few that the way you zoomed wasn't the way you worked.
Yeah, right.
Or do the same with us. Maybe they didn't jive with us. So it made hiring very difficult.
I could see that. Yeah.
And we're still down a couple vets, but I compare us to like other people who, you know, they haven't had new vets in years. And I managed to open up a new clinic in the middle of all this.
Yeah. So right.
I am definitely no complaints, no whining here.
Yeah.
I think we were lucky. I feel very fortunate for our staff. There were definitely people who depended on this job who couldn't get laid off.
Yeah.
And the PPP, PPP came through for us the first time too. Like that kept us. So no one got laid off, even though they were working less hours, we still paid them as if they're working full time.
Awesome. That's amazing.
Felt awesome to do because, you know, I don't have a big corporate behind me. So, so like if that hadn't happened, you know, there would have been some tough decisions. So fortunately did not have to do tough decisions.
That's awesome.
We bought lunch for everyone every day for, I think, 3 months. We didn't want to make them go out and have to.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's back when we didn't know, right? Like, oh, how do you get this thing?
Right.
So, it was, we had fun with it. We had fun with it. I don't, you know, there's a lot of singing, a lot of singing. probably good things. Clients couldn't hear everything that they would have thought we were super, super silly. And then just the puppies. I mean, I never thought in my life I would say one day I was like, I just want to see a sick dog. I wanted a dog to be sick.
Of course.
I want to talk about something besides what food to feed, when to neuter, and when will the chewing stop?
Yeah. Right.
And I was like, I never thought those words would come from my mouth.
Yeah. No, that's fair. No, I mean, it's really remarkable to see. I mean, you opened up another location during COVID. I mean, that's pretty remarkable. So, you know, there's so many veterinarians in the world. I mean, you did mention that, you know, Boston, there wasn't a ton, but why do you think you've been so successful up to this point? You've been around for a long time. You're not going anywhere anytime soon. You know, what makes you guys different?
Well, one, I would say that, you know, so once again, I'm always, you hear about other industries where they really rag on their competition, and that's not how we are in Boston. I mean, I think the best all have respect for each other. Yeah. It's just finding what works for you. So we've prioritized a few things. So, you know, we are one of a handful of fear-free clinics in Boston. We were the first in Boston.
Okay.
And so, you know, what that means is that we really concentrate on decreasing fear, anxiety, and stress and handling. We, you know, what I say is I want, when you walk by my clinic, that your dog pulls to have you come in.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I want him to pull as hard as he pulls to get into Polka Dog. Like, to me, that's a win. And I want every dog to do that.
Yeah.
And so we spend a lot of time and money. You saw my treat bill every month, because we want that dog to pull in. We want you, if your cat is sick, that you don't wait 3 weeks to come in because you're so worried about what the experience is going to be.
Yeah.
And so, you know, every single one of our employees, front desk assistants, technicians, all are fear-free certified. So we kind of put our money where our mouth is for that.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's across the board. The other thing is we pay pretty well. I mean, we go up against some of the big corporate people because it's veterinary medicine is caught in this dichotomy of, you know, we are so specialized, right? We're veterinarians and vet techs, but they don't get paid anywhere near what they deserve. And so we are very fast to give raises.
Oh, wow. Nice.
We're going to be one of the first veterinarian clinics to actually give a travel stipend because it's expensive to live in Boston. I mean, I'm a veterinarian.
Yeah. Right.
I'm saying it's expensive to live in Boston. Yeah. And so, you know, just realizing that our staff are specialized. No one went in this for the money. They're doing it because they love what they do.
Yeah.
We look at just personal health and well-being. Both Paul and I are members of NAMV board members, which is Not One More Vet. There's actually a very high suicide rate in veterinarians and veterinary staffs just because of the work hard, no money. And, you know, we're very fortunate. You know, we don't do declaws and ear croppings and tail docks and some of those other kind of butchering things that they do more in, I think, other states or more rural. Like, we don't have that kind of stuff, which is great. We don't. We're not euthanasia clinics. I mean, so we, and most our clientele can afford to provide the best care.
Yep.
So one of the reasons why I practice in Boston and not somewhere rural is I grew up where it's only 25 cents for a bullet. I don't like practicing like that. So we are very lucky that we're very fortunate where we are in Boston to be a career. But it can be challenging. It's, you know, in this day where Dr. Google knows better than you you know, the breeder is telling you it's no grain free, ignore your veterinarian. So what we try to do is just remember what our staff is up against. And so pre-COVID, we did quarterly outings, you know, we feed these guys more food than they know what to do with. I mean, it's always pizza day, ice cream day, cookie day, donut day.
You know, taking applications people, right now? Damn.
the way to people's hearts.
Yeah.
And so I think that shows, I mean, we have a very happy staff. They love what they do. And we are quick to give shout outs. I mean, so when we get our Google reviews, 5 out of 5 is almost across the way, like, I will make sure that if a staff member gets called out, that's brought up to them. Our doctors all get a subjective bonus based on just like, are they giving back to the community?
Yeah.
Are they training staff members? So stuff that isn't just based on merit, or it is based on merit.
Right.
So I think that makes it more than just a job.
Yeah.
You know, I hear more laughter than I hear crying. Those are all good things. And we also just, you know, constantly keep striving for better.
Yeah.
You know, I look back, like, you know, it was a lot harder when I first started out. Like, you know, money was tight and I was just learning to be I was a boss. I wasn't a mentor. I wasn't a leader.
Yeah.
I was a boss. Sometimes a bad boss. But, you know, learning from that and getting better, continuing to educate myself and the staff.
Yeah. And, it seems so obvious, but like investing in your staff pays huge dividends long term. If they genuinely enjoy working for you and with you, they're going to want to be there for the long term. Like, it seems so obvious, but sometimes that's not always the case. So that's really cool, you know, that you treat them as well as you do, for sure.
We also have a very high rate of getting our staff members into vet school. I think we have 17. No, when one graduated, well, a new one. Yeah, I think we have 17 young adults in veterinary school. So we do a wow. very good job of that, which is awesome. But then it's sad to see them go.
Yeah,
but that's only being open for 7 years. So we got a pretty good track record for that. So you know, that's the other thing too, is that at Boston Veterinary Clinic, it's constant learning. I mean, we just really. We love to learn and teach. It's not one of those places you're ever going to hear, well, that's the way we do it here. That's what we've been doing for years. Not going to fly.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice, man. Nice. So you mentioned, you know, you pour a lot of money into it. How do you guys market yourself? Is a lot of it social media, you know, podcasts, you know, obviously, but how else do you go about marketing yourselves?
Yeah. I mean, it used to be veterinary medicine with all word of mouth. I mean, and there still is. I mean, I think our clients are by far our best marketers ever.
Yes.
We like to do fun stuff though. So we were one of the first clinics to give out, like, it's weird, but little poop bags that, you know, had our emblem on it, frisbees, you know, leashes. We had a refer a friend program. We had Brody Bucks. My dog's name is Brody. We made a big $20 Brody Bucks.
Yeah.
Nice. We have an amazing website that is not a cookie cutter website made by some big company. It's a friend who was the genius behind that.
Yeah.
And we do use social media. I mean, we have fun with social media.
Yeah.
You know, I remember at one point turning to the front desk and it was like, you get to take pictures of puppies and get paid for it. Like, go with it. And so we have fun with it. We have little puppy boards. You know, when people have kids, they say, oh, he weighs, you know, 6 months, he weighs thus and such. We have that for puppies.
Nice.
And then we do fun events. I mean, all of our events always get back to a charity. We do pictures with Santa every year, even this year. So this year, and I was like Scrooge. I was like, no, it's COVID. We can't take pictures. And Paul had to prove me wrong. So he ordered a snow globe and put Santa in the snow globe. So legit.
Oh, nice.
Huge, huge snow globe. With little flakes, and you know, Santa was not a senior, but you know, definitely not young something. We had to protect him from COVID, so he was in the snow globe. And then we brought the dogs up on a chair, and so it looked like they were. It was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
And then we gave the money to, you know, a couple of different charities. So we do that.
Yeah.
We've had drinks with drag queens, you know, for gay pride.
Yeah. Yeah.
We you know, so that all that's marketing too, right? So
100%. Yeah.
It's you take your picture and where do you put it? You put it on social media.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, we have fun with it, but always there's got to be a charitable component, giving back.
Nice. Yeah.
Because that's how I grew up. You give back to the community because really we are a community based, company. We're, you know, LGBT family owned, and we want to give back. You know, that's what makes it great.
Now. Yeah, man. No, that's awesome. And like, yeah, like if going to those events, that is a form of marketing. Cause like you said, that's a fun part of marketing. People take pictures and they're just going to post it elsewhere. Right. Like, so you don't have to like, oh, we need to post on Instagram at this time on this day of every single week. Like you're just naturally going out marketing and people just going to promote in the Santa. I mean, in the glow, I mean, that's really cool. Like that's just fun stuff to do. That's just naturally going to be promoted, you know? So.
And then my own personal brand, Dr. B, I've been doing a lot of stuff on my own. I mean, going into the buildings, I used to do a lot of first aid classes. I got away from that with COVID, but starting to pick that up again. My podcast, Tales from the City, is, you know, Tales of an Urban Vet, where we just kind of talk about having a dog in the city. It's not the same as, you know, when you watch, you know, we won't say his name, but when you watch some of these pseudo trainers on TV, like, you know, no, we don't have like, you're not walking through a canyon with your dog. Like, you're walking down Tremont Street and you're going to see 12 dogs who don't know how to walk on leashes. And so that's the reality. And so we talk about what urban living means. And and then I've been doing, you know, podcasts like this, just like getting out there talking. I can talk for hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just, you know, talking and educating. And, you know, this is the fun part because, you know, some of the podcasts and stuff I do, I'm giving advice that helps people have healthier pets are healthier people. It's all about the human animal bond. And, you know, when I got in my own clinic, one of the things I said is I wanted to make having a pet easy again because it's overwhelming. I walked in, you know, vets are bad. We sometimes forget to grab food off the shelf.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was headed to the Cape and I went into a Petco and holy crap, the amount of food. I just was like, how do people do this?
Yeah. Right.
And so, you know, that's what I try to remember is that, you know, that clients are barraged from every angle.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's misinformation. And so to try to like break it down, one of the things I think my clients love about me is I'll talk like a fourth grader. You know, I'll explain and explain and explain again. And I use my hands and I give dumb analogies.
Yeah, yeah.
But just to make it so they get it, so they can make good decisions when I'm not there with them. And they're like, sure. Oh, yeah. I remember Dr. B saying that, you know, that this is what's really important when you're looking at a bag of food, not that it says grain free. Right. You should not say grain free, just for record.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know. So, you know, you said misinformation. What's a common myth or misconception about the veterinary world?
One, that we play with puppies all day, which actually was true during COVID.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a very romantic notion to being a veterinarian.
Yeah.
But there's also, it's dark side, right? So the amount of suicides, you deal with clients who sometimes get pets they can't afford, you know? So, you know, it's sad. I will see that this is going to take a dark turn here for a minute, but you know, you'll see a price tag for a Australian Labradoodle for $2,500, $3,000.
Yeah.
The dog eats something it shouldn't, and then they're crying they can't afford to take X-rays.
Yeah.
You know, and then you'll hear like, well, it's your job. You love animals. You need to do that for us. And I'm like, that's right. Sometimes when I say, well, if you find a way that I can have a staff without paying them and
convince
my landlord that I don't have to pay for my lease.
Yeah.
Then sure. I'll do it for free. I don't care.
Yeah.
Let's barter. Let's all barter. and I have bartered, to be honest with you. I mean, we do what we can, and we actually have charity cases that will, but you know, that's the part that gets that sometimes sucks your soul is,
yeah,
you know, I personally think it's a right to have a pet. Okay, it is not your inherent right.
Right.
It's not a right. It's a privilege, is what I meant to say.
Yeah.
And that's the way that I think people should look at having a pet. I try not to say the word owner. If I have, I apologize. I try to say pet parent, pet guardian, because you're taking this animal into your life, and you should plan on how you're going to take care of it. Now, whether that's insurance or mommy or daddy, or you have a savings. Now, whatever the case is.
Yeah.
But you should not come to me or my staff members and say, well, we expect you to take care of it for free because I made some bad decisions.
Yeah, no.
So that's the dark side that people don't see. And I mean, I get instant messages all the time from people who aren't even my friends asking for advice.
Yeah.
And you know, I have one I show at staff meetings that I literally watched this person just decompensate. You know, at 10 o'clock, hey, you don't know me, but my cat is sick and I need some help.
Oh, Jesus.
I turned my phone off after 10.
Yeah.
And then at 1 o'clock, you know, what the heck? I can't believe you're not helping me. Don't you love animals? And then by 4 o'clock in the morning, they're swearing at me, you know?
Yeah.
And if I wasn't so strong about, like, I know my values, I know that I'm a good person and I know that I do give back a lot and we do a lot of other ways. That's really hard for some people. So that's one of the misconceptions is just because we don't give things away doesn't mean we don't love animals. We care about animals. But I've got 20 other animals for people who were responsible pet owners who I got to take care of. And so that's the part that people don't always understand. It makes it sometimes tougher because, of course, we want to help.
Of course.
I mean, the idea of any animals suffering for a second, but, you know, there are only so many resources and I got to take care of it. And that's what happened a little bit during COVID, too. I mean, we had times we couldn't take on new clients.
Yeah.
And, you know, people would cuss out. I mean, our poor front desk, I mean, they're just gods and goddesses up there.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, no, because we actually have to take care of the clients we have.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
So that's where I think sometimes people should just maybe step back and be like, okay, they are mere mortals.
Yeah.
Yes. Maybe they have a DVM after their name, but they're mere mortals. You know, I always say hug your vet or, you know, elbow bump your vet.
Yeah, yeah.
Say thank you. Be nice.
Yeah.
We're doing our best.
Yeah. No, I would agree. I would totally agree with that. It is a privilege. Like I was talking to you before we recorded, like my boy, like he'll be 13. By the time this episode comes out, he'll just turn 13. May 2nd, he turns 13. I've had him since he was 9 weeks old. I was 24 and single, living alone. Like I wasn't ready, I'll be honest, to get a dog, but I quickly learned the very first night, like, holy shit. Like I'm always going to be around with him. Like he has to get fed. He has to get taken out. Like now my schedule revolves around him. Like it's just the way it is. Yeah. But yeah, some people, especially with COVID, you know, they're adopting puppies or cats for companions for themselves because they're alone. And then like at some point this year, when whatever normal is opens back up, they're like, oh shit, like now I have this animal, and hopefully they've fallen in love with the animal and it's not going to be an issue. But you know, I can see that happening in a lot of ways for sure. So what do you see? What do you see for the future of Boston Veterinary Clinic? You've been around for a while. You're going to have, you know, 8 locations. Like, what do you see for the future for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think we will continue expand as well, as long as we can do it well.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely, you know, I think that there's a point at which Brookline needs to be a full clinic. We have a lot of disappointed cat clients who want us to see their cats in Brookline. And, but we're only going to do as long as we can do it well. So, you know, we do have a scarcity of employees. So that will be something we're going to work on, some we're recruiting.
Yeah.
And, but I think we've got something pretty special to share. I think there's still areas of the city that are underserved by vets. People are having to travel, you know, for their pets. We've toyed with the idea of having a specialty clinic. Not sure that's a whole other beast. I'm not sure that.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I think I'm going to take my show on the road. I mean, I think I love to talk, and I would like to work with the younger generations of vets to be and vet staffs, and just let them know that it can be fun. I mean, I think that it gets lost a little bit. I like to have fun. I mean, I'm a fun guy. My name is Tigger. I work hard. I play hard. You know, you can do this job, and it doesn't have to be the end of it. You can still smile.
Yeah.
And just remember that. I mean, I got a little too serious there for a while, and you know, it took some friends to remind me, like, hey, do you remember why you got in this?
Yeah.
And so to bring that to the road and remember mental and physical health, and those where I see it. So I see us expanding, continue to spread that message, but also, you know, our heart is our clinics that we have, and just you know, keeping. And I can't wait to start having events again. I mean, I love events.
Yeah.
Events are just, you know, decorating and seeing clients who can come in and see what we do.
Yeah,
that's what's been toughest with COVID as all as, you know, I can tell you on the phone, but to show it, to give tours of the Seaport, we've got this amazing facility.
Yeah.
You know, 20 people have seen.
Yeah.
So that's, we've got some catching up to do.
Nice, man. That's awesome. That's awesome. So obviously, like you said, work hard, play hard. You're still a young guy. Do you think, unless being physically or mentally incapable of working, do you ever picture yourself completely 100% retiring, or do you think you'll have your hand in, you know, maybe something passively in the vet world?
I can't see I'm going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's right now corporations are offering gobs and gobs of money. And we sat down with a couple and that was one of the thoughts. I was like, okay, I could sell these clinics. I wasn't going to, but just curious, right?
Yeah. I mean,
and I was like, well, what the heck do I do with myself now?
I'm like, I don't start
all over again.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I see myself being, even if I'm not actively practicing as a veterinarian, coaching, consulting, you know, as I said, I was very fortunate to have some good mentors. I'm slowly learning to how to be a mentor myself.
Yeah.
And you know, and how to do it right. Right. So a lot of vets don't get that. And so I want to be able to share that message. So I'll be involved some way or the other, or even if it's just doing podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I asked that question because I'm the same way. Like, I'm like you, I'm very type A OCD, 80, like all the DDZs, like all of them. That's how I am. I'm always on the go. But you know, outside of work, what are some of the hobbies that you enjoy doing when you do get some time to yourself?
So I love traveling. This last year has been very, I mean, basically from the time that I think I could fly without a parent, I've gone to 3 or 4 countries a year.
So
this has been really tough for me. I love new adventures, new food, new people. I'm an extrovert with a capital E. I get my energy from that kind of stuff. So I miss that. I love to dance. I'm a big dancer.
Nice.
You know, back in my club days. But just you know, being out in full of life and energy and meeting new people. And I do like teaching. To see when someone gets something.
Yeah.
It's just a really awesome feeling.
Yeah.
And you can't get that on your own, right? You gotta have someone. I mean, I'm still teaching myself stuff, but it's more fun to watch someone else learn.
Yeah,
learn
no.
Stuff. Definitely. So, those are the things that I miss.
That's cool. That's cool. So going back to the countries visiting, because my wife and I, we got married in August of 2019. So we're like, okay, like 2020 we'll travel, and then 2021 we'll think about kids. And it's like 2020, like it's like, damn, like we didn't get to go anywhere. So outside of the US, what is, like, top two countries that you visited?
So I've been fortunate enough to go to New Zealand twice. New Zealand is one of the, I don't know how pro-American they're being right now for travel, but it's interesting. It's one of the few areas, I think, on Earth that has all seven climate types. And so it goes from like, they've got fjords and rainforest. The people are truly some of the friendly. The Kiwis are like the friendliest people you've ever met. And you can go from the North Island to the South Island. If you like wine, their wines are like amazing.
Oh, wow.
I'm not a big meat eater, so the whole lamb sheep thing didn't work for me so much. But fortunately, there's water everywhere. So being islands, so there's a lot of seafood.
Nice.
And so I love New Zealand. I mean, so that's kind of the outdoorsy thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I love London. I mean, London as far as, I guess I like Madrid too. Yeah. Like, European cities just have something to offer that are like boring, brand new U.S. cities just don't have, like that sense of history.
Yeah.
And once again, friendliness. I've never encountered, a snobby Spaniard.
Yeah.
They just, they sit down and the whole idea of tapas and sitting around listening to live music. It's amazing. The little town centers and all that. So those are kind of my, the two extremes.
Nice.
And I've yet to go on a safari. My safari plans kind of got derailed by having a clinic. So you can't really be in Africa in the outback and have three businesses running. So that's that's where I want to go someday. While there's still elephants and stuff around to see,
No, my best friend, him and his wife on their honeymoon, they went to South Africa and did a safari. And I was like, really? They did it for, I think it was like 20 days too. He's like, dude, if we don't do this now, we're never going to. It's like, we're going to have kids in like within the next 18 months, probably. Like, if we don't do it now, we're waiting 20 years. So I think it was like almost 3 weeks they did it. And they said it was an unbelievable time. So that's cool. All right, Brian. So last couple of questions, I asked every podcast episode guest these questions. If you could tell your 18-year-old self one thing, what would you tell him?
Relax.
Yeah.
Relax. There's definitely times. If ever I was going to get a tattoo, I think that relax, because I can get a little wound up.
And
stop. Smell the roses.
Yeah.
Do a little jig.
Yeah.
don't take yourself so seriously all the time.
Nah, that's a good one. I can relate to that. I need to relax a little bit. So that's a good answer. So lastly, everyone has a varying depiction of what success looks like to them. How do you define success?
So I read your questions ahead of time. I had a a smart ass answer. It's like, every time mom sees me in the paper, right? was a paper, now I guess it's every time mom sees you online.
Yeah.
I think if you can walk down the street and hold your head up high and know that you've made a difference, to me, that's success.
Nah.
And whatever that looks like for you or someone else. But I think knowing that you're making a difference in the world, a good difference, I think that's success.
Yeah. And it sounds like you're doing that too. You're doing a lot for animals, just giving back to younger people, teaching them stuff. So I think that's a great answer. Brian, thank you very much for coming on Boston's Best. Really appreciate the time. Boston Veterinary Clinic, multiple locations. And like we chatted about, anytime any of these gets posted, we make sure to tag you guys in every post.
Great. Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Brian. I'll catch you later. Hey, everyone. I just wanted to say thank you for checking out my podcast. I really do appreciate the love I've received for this show. I believe now more than ever, any exposure to local businesses is great for them to receive, and I'm trying to do my part. If you are a local business owner or someone you know in the Boston area that would like to be featured on the podcast, please email me at bostonsbestpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, please follow this podcast. It's available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on Instagram with the handle @BostonsBest_podcast, as well as Facebook at facebook.com/BostonsBestPodcast. Again, I truly appreciate the great feedback for this show, and stay tuned for each new episode every Friday at 8 a.m. Take care.